We acknowledge the Whadjuk people and the wider Noongar community, which we conduct our ceremonies, do our zazen, have our talks and discussion tonight. May the voice of the Buddha be present in our activities and our words and our hearts. Please sit comfortably. The Spanish word, this is called the Dharma of memory. The Spanish word recordar, to remember, from the Latin recordis, to pass back through the heart. Remember, to pass back through your heart. The case tonight is from the Gateless Barrier, case 24. It's Feng Shui's equality and differentiation. A monk asked priest Feng Shui, speech and silence are concerned with equality and differentiation. How can I transcend equality and differentiation? Feng Shui said, I always think of Jiangnan in March, partridges chirp among the many fragrant blossoms. Women's comment. Feng Shui functions like lightning, creating an appropriate way to practice. But why does he get involved with the tongue of a predecessor and not free himself? If you can see intimately into this point, the way will open for you naturally. Now set aside the samadhi of words. Just give me one phrase. Women's verse. It was not a verse of elegant tone. Before speaking, it's already expressed. If you go on chattering glibly, you'll find yourself at a loss. Memory is now. When we're remembering, we think we're in the past. It's so understandable. We're so drawn in, you know. I just remember what a lost opportunity that was. When someone asks you, say, oh, I was there. Yeah. But memory unfolds in this very moment. Hard to sum up when you say, well, sum up a memory and we can check this. We can make it evidence-based, if you like. It's actually very difficult to find the memory, I suspect. Anticipation is like this. Anticipation takes place now. Planning. And we're very in the future when we're planning, is also right within the vastness of the present moment. Memory, whether it's reliable or not, and for me these days the holes appear to get larger and larger, so I speak from unreliability tonight. You know, Dogen said, the moment missed is also it. Dogen's Dharma is very comprehensive, so yeah, the moment is it for sure, but even the moment missed is it. But somehow it doesn't feel like a lot of consolation, if you see what I mean. So memory, whether it's reliable or not, helps us to form our sense of self, especially a sense that is continuous in time, that's formed from our memories, stretching back until there's nothing but darkness. We create, in this way, an enduring self in time, and we cling to that as well. And defend it. That's easy to test out. When we meditate, the sense of that enduring self, which is formed of memory and anticipation, and it starts to dissolve, and we become more open, more inclusive, more open and more included as well. And the separate, the sense of that separate, time-bound self tends to dissolve. The more you sit, the more open space appears there. Regarding our past and our memories of it, we are all unreliable narrators. This is easy to test out. You try sitting down with a sibling and discussing some scene from childhood. What mother said, what father did. The mutual incomprehension that arises there is stunning. And the difference in stories is likewise. I don't remember any of that. It follows a completely different story then about the incident. I think in terms, remember Arthur Wells has this this wonderful expression. He talks about the forgettery. And I think the forgettery is really important. I think it's really important that we do forget some things. You know the phrase forget and forgive? Joko Beck said, most of our difficulties, our hopes and our worries are empty fantasies. Nothing has ever existed except this moment. That's all there is. That's all we are. She goes on, yet most human beings spend 50 to 90% or more of their time in their imagination, living in fantasy. It's all fantasy, all imagination. Living in fantasy. I love her, the actual numbers that are placed on it, somewhere between, spend 50 to 90% of their time, or today I spent 37% of my time in completely lost in fantasy. How was it for you? yes. Joko Beck is wonderful. She has such a scorched earth approach to these problems. She then goes on, we think about what has happened to us, what might have happened, how we feel about it, how we should be different, how others should be different, how it's all a shame, and on and on. It's all fantasy, all imagination. Memory is imagination. Every memory that we stick to devastates our life. There you go. I beg to differ. You know, memory also can bring comfort. The memory of being encouraged or supported, loved. I don't think these are negligible in terms of our life at all. Being guided, being helped. The memory of also of those moments that come from nowhere. I often think that the pursuit of happiness is maybe a bit misguided because happiness often seems to be quite happenstance. So, I mean, it's probably a childhood memory, but riding your bike, coming round the corner, it's raining a bit, and there are raindrops dripping off the leaves of the gum tree, and the light catches those raindrops, and suddenly you're happy. You know, it's just, you know. Lots and lots of those kind of happenstance things. But I think with happiness, we can also give sense to that. We say someone had a happy life. It'll give some sense to the tenor of a life taken overall, which doesn't preclude unhappiness or even tragedy. But, they had a happy life. Regarding memory, we do tend to amplify the good bits, even as we try to suppress the painful parts. At the same time, we have the artistic privilege of creating an imaginary life for an imaginary self. It may be our best creation, that imaginary life. We are certainly capable of not only creating it, but defending it as well. So I think that memory is also, you know, has a creative role. I mean, we marshal it to reinforce ourselves. But, you know, the whole matter of, I was thinking of Marcel Proust writing A la Recherche du Temps Perdu, his great novel, you know, the minute examination of his life and the lives of actually people alarmingly close to him, to the extent that he got sued when the novel was published. Well, no, not when the novel was published, when one of the earlier volumes was published. But, you know, our lives are also the material of creativity, whether it's formalised through literature or painting or music, or whether it's just our normal discourse with everyone else and with ourselves. Yeah, I think there's that. So I'm sticking with 37%. Especially in the earlier stages of Zen practice, we're admonished not to get caught up in memory, to cut it off, to let it go. The challenges of practice, coming back to the moment, not being caught up in stories of the past, for instance, coming home, letting go. But, you know, memory can also be the agent of awakening. A bird singing, or the rising smoke of incense, or the touch of a bristly beard, to awaken from any of those, that's natural. But to be awakened by a memory, how can that be? A memory can be a Dharma gate, an opening to the way, not less than a ray of sunlight falling on a pewter mug. I'm having trouble remembering the page order here. This is the an appropriate way to practice a memory. Just that memory is it. Like just that traffic is it. That just that very memory is transparent to night. All of us sitting here, ocean, stars. So intimacy across time. Eduardo Galeano, in his wonderful book, which I've been using for the last 30 years as a great Dharma text. The Book of Embraces by Eduardo Galeano, full of the most wonderful stories, many of them full of the spirit of the Dharma, the spirit of the Zen way. He introduces us to the Argentinian poet and activist Juan Gelman, and to the question of true contemporaries. Now, true contemporaries is much more than just remembering. It's that affinity that we find that cuts, that is across time. I mean, memory is an element of it, but it also, past and present are together in it. Intimacy across time. And in Zen, we think of the present moment and its expanse, but it is also temporal or beyond the temporal. The past and present are also interfused. And this is called here my true contemporaries. So, who are my contemporaries? One Gelman asks himself. One says that sometimes he comes across men who smell of fear in Buenos Aires, Paris, or anywhere in the world, and feels that these men are not his contemporaries. But there is a Chinese who, thousands of years ago, wrote a poem about a goat herd who is far from his beloved, yet can hear in the middle of the night, in the middle of the snow, the sound of her comb running through her hair. And reading this distant poem, one finds that, yes, these people, the poet, the goat herd, and the woman, are truly his contemporaries. However hurt and shattered one might be, one can always find true contemporaries anywhere in time. Who are your true contemporaries? The author of it's about the story involves Eduardo involves Juan Gelman, but the author is Eduardo Galeano, of the author of the Book of Embraces. He's a Uruguayan journalist, writer, and novelist, as well as being a champion of the left who fought for the liberation of oppressed people in Latin America. He was considered to be global soccer's preeminent man of letters. Isn't that beautiful? Wonderful. And regarded by some as a literary giant of the Latin American left. I've carried Galeano's Book of Embraces with me over the years, drawing on his prose poems and brief stories for Dharma talks and teishos, as well as recommending his book to everyone, as I recommend it to you if you don't have it. We get a sense of the Dharma as it plays out in Galeano's book, especially in a concluding piece which is called The Gust. It goes like this. The wind whistles within me, I am naked, master of nothing, master of no one, not even of my own convictions. I am my face in the wind, against the wind, and I am the wind that strikes my face. My first teacher, Robert Aiken, once said to me, the way is grounded in genuine experience and poetry. That made me so happy. It's grounded in genuine experience and poetry. And, you know, Roshi never thought of himself as much of a poet, but when we chant his dedications here, they are beautiful beyond belief. And they stand up to all of these years, like 40 years, probably, well, let's say 35 years we've been chanting those. And I have never tired of them. Yeah. You can be modest like that, but you can be great. The country of the past may return to us through what the novelist Proust called involuntary memory. We all experience this. A musty smell brings back the classroom that we knew as a five-year-old. The smell of smoke and the way that smoke deepens the sun's glow, brings up the memory of living at the edge of the bush as a child. Or a pop anthem evokes the pains and joys of our youth, or even the image of our first love. Involuntary memory for me is that being at the football and actually this is reading about the football afterwards, but it evokes the football. The whiff of the West Australian's newsprint has me back at the Fremantle Oval with South Fremantle playing East Fremantle in the Derby there. So I wrote a little poem about this. This is involuntary memory, how a smell can trigger the past in great richness. A whiff of the West Australian's newsprint has me back in the outer at Fremantle Oval, South going down in the Derby, while bellicose East supporters thwack their opposite numbers with rolled up newspapers. Hey, what do you think of that? Thudding boots, a hard breathing stampede. It's all sweat, leather and glaring eyes. But coming up roses as that bronze torpedo punt wobbles in the red sky over us all. South turning it round on the siren. Hey, what did you think of that? Then the reek of a Rothmans, contemptuously stubbed out in the freshly wounded grass. So, yeah, what is involuntary memory for you? I was thinking of the fact that we're sharing this, and this seems like a very important theme within memory. We all die, and yet there is a part of us that believes that our existence is, in the same breath, timeless, edgeless, and that we are the good friend of forever. It all depends on what we understand as who. If we take the low road, who is any one of us in our ordinary attachment to our names and roles, avidly cultivating the me that isn't there, and feeling entirely vulnerable as well we might? If we take the high road, then we are not limited by our skin or our skull. We are not even limited by our ideas about who we think we are. In the spirit of the high road, in your 5'6" or 6 foot, I can never get the centimetres right, 170 centimetres, name your own height, body, the universe comes and goes. We can get a taste of this through the experience of Pedro Rojo, a Zen student of Daniel Taranio's and mine from Chile. This is memory because I'm writing it as though he is still here. Pedro lived in WA with his family for 5 years and was an inspiration for the practice of the way in our Sangha. And I can probably tell this story now. He worked at IKEA, and it was loading using the forklift there, and stacking stuff and unstacking it. And then about 11 o'clock in the morning, I think on a Thursday morning, he would sneak out and come and do Doksan with me in Bayswater, and then head back for more forklifting. And he was a lawyer in Chile, but came here didn't. Well, I think very difficult to get involved in the law coming in like that. But he's a wonderful student, incredibly inspiring. I think we were not doing session at one stage, and he said, "You're not doing Sashin? What is this?" Very shortly afterwards, we started doing Sashin. So, yeah, he was wonderful. But he told me this wonderful story. Pedro's words. After dropping my son at school, I turned on the ignition in my car. The radio was already on, and it was Vivaldi. I knew the melody, and I knew how it continues. Naturally, without effort, it felt a part of me. And all of a sudden, I was living in the music. The music was me. I felt that my intimacy with the music made me the music, so much so that even if I died, a part of me would still remain in the music, and that music would be myself. I don't care if I die. Even if I die, I'm living as that music. I thought it was interesting to think that I won't ever die because I am more than myself. Although, of course, no doubt I will die. I will write to you to remember it, this experience, and because I thought that there is something there, something of our practice. I love the last line, something of, you know, I thought there was something of our practice. These are just some isolated memories, so just to throw out there for us. I remember the joy of discovering the way in Sangha. I remember that on summer nights, students from our group would gather after Zazen in the roof garden of Cafe Lulba in Northbridge. There we'd drink coffee and talk about karma and enlightenment. The infectious joy of those discussions helped the early growth of our Sangha. Surely Sangha is likewise an opportunity for our deep encounter with the ancient mirror. We enlighten and get enlightened by our companions. In the old days when the Zen group of Western Australia was doing Sesshin at Mount Helena, a young woman student was standing at the head of the line waiting to go to Doksan. Another student who was in Doksan left the room, and looking up the path, she saw the student who was waiting. With this, she had an awakening. All she could say was, but she was just standing there. She was just standing there. We have been sitting together for 40 years. 40 years of devotedly sitting together in a space which, with a few simple rituals, we designate as sacred. A space in which we timelessly deepen together. Enlightenment is not only personal, it is also communal. I have these skewed memories of all-night sits, but they've transposed over time. I'm sure they were at the Beaconsfield Ashram Yoga Centre there, but this is old age, I'm sure, I've transposed them to the centre of Perth, to the where the Mayfair Theatreette used to be, very close to Glenn Buildings on the corner of Hay Street and William Street, I think, there. And it's a magical territory there, because I remember as a kid going to the Sunday morning pictures there, and they would have, there was something called the Passing Parade, very creaky, old, black and white, but they had this great theme, you know, la-dum, ba-dum, la-da-da-dum, ba-dum. This is a theme to Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, or one of the themes. And I can remember this so vividly in this, yeah, these newsreels and this old folk stories. Yeah. And somehow the all-night sits, I used to imagine we were coming out up the stairs from there, sort of rubbing our eyes, and you know, like this, it's 6 in the morning and it's cold. And but it was wonderful that the group did all-night sits, and no matter where. And the Beaconsfield Ashram reminds me of, learning about sense of timing. Because I remember John Tarrant came, because he came a number of times to Western Australia to lead Sesshin in the year. Aiken Roshi came to us. I think John must have come at least 4 or 5 times. And he would give a talk at the ashram each time, which was great. People would gather and Zen group of West Australia would come. And I think the first time he was giving a talk, he said to me before I was there to announce him, he said, go and tell him he's crazy. Don't listen to a word he says. This is really hard, you know. So I got up there and I said, I gave a very courteous introduction. This is John Tarrant. Roshi has flown in from San Francisco and all that, you know. So, but the next year, you know, had a measurable confidence, you know. So I thought, oh, what a great idea. I got up there and I said, he's crazy, don't listen to a word he said. All I can remember, John's furious face walking from the back of the white with fury. I don't remember what he said. It was hard to know when you've been introduced like that. But, I thought, you know, sense of timing is so important in life. It's so important in Zen, you know. You've got to know your moment, you know, and if you don't. Yeah. Nothing lasts, including us. We're all just for the time being. This isn't solely a personal consideration, it's also a shared one. Nothing lasts, and we're all in it together, as Robert Aitken wrote. The fact that our lives are finite suggests that we should make the most of the time we have, even though we mostly don't know how much that is. Finding time to love and to express our love. Finding time to finish business, to seek forgiveness and to forgive, to create while there is time. And if we fail to do any of this, Joko Beck wrote, everyone is doing their best. Even the most wretched life, a life that seems to abjectly fail, cut short by drug abuse or dealing, still embodies the vastness, graces the planet. Everyone is doing their best. Thank you, everyone, for your love, generosity, and gracious support over these 30 years of teaching. It has been huge. I speak personally here. It has been huge for me. It has been great to walk this way together. It's been great to sit like this over such a time and to deepen together, and I am hugely grateful to you. It's made this possible that people can come in here, can join us, can meditate, can deepen with us and deepen us. It's entirely mutual. Use the time. Even a memory is it, shot through with stars and cold, with myriad light years, not less.